Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
If I have one plea, it is the media begin to focus on the seriousness and the gravity of the problem that New York State faces. Everybody's attention should be on that.
That Lieutenant Governor again, Richard Ravitch. And yes, to read the Post and the Daily News, you would think New York's biggest problem is whether Governor Patterson is guilty of witness tampering, which, by the way, today's Daily News says maybe he isn't. Although someone seems to have pressured the ex-girlfriend of the governor's closest aide, but after pounding away day after day, the governor did this, he should resign. All of a sudden, the Daily News says, well, maybe not. But that's not state government's biggest problem. The budget is. The looming $9.5 billion hole for the coming fiscal year that could be devastating to health and education and more, but without a lot of good alternatives. Well, yesterday, as Richard Hake just reported on the news, Lieutenant Governor Richard Ravitch detailed a plan to restructure the coming debt through long-term borrowing coupled with a new commission to make sure the state doesn't overspend anymore. But can this work? Borrowing your way out of debt? Having the people who break the rules appoint a new commission to enforce the rules? And who's running New York anyway, since this is a plan from the lieutenant governor that apparently does not have the governor's full support or even prior knowledge? Let's get two views. James Parrott from the liberal think tank, the Fiscal Policy Institute, and E.J. McMahon from the conservative think tank, the Manhattan Institute. James, E.J., welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
And listeners, should the state of New York borrow to ease the pain of the coming year's massive budget deficit, or should it just figure out how to allocate the pain now? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. All New Yorkers welcome. This is such an important decision for the state. Get your 2 cents in, 212-433-9692. So, James Parrott, explain the basics of the Ravitch plan as you understand it, because I think most people are still just starting to get their heads around this, and explain how it would soften the blow for New York State in the coming year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Fine. First of all, clearly I think the governor did the right thing in asking somebody like Dick Ravitch to look at the state's budget problems and come up with a framework on how to address this. The framework is an excellent start. You know, it's not perfect. It needs some fine-tuning. But basically what it calls for is a couple of technical things that I think have a big difference. The state now uses something called cash accounting, and Ravitch is recommending that it adopt GAAP accounting, which basically means that it has to recognize longer-term expenses that are involved in longer-term commitments up front, and that it can't recognize revenues that are due down the road and use those in the current year. So it's an improvement in terms of avoiding the ability, which the state has now and has used a lot in recent years, to move money between fiscal years, obligations between fiscal years, and yet still claim at the end of the fiscal year that the budget is balanced. We know it hasn't been in some of the past years. Secondly, the governor is proposing to make July 1st the start of the fiscal year. The state's main revenue source is the personal income tax. People file their tax returns by April 15th. The state really doesn't know what the revenues are going to look like that it has to fund the expenses in the new fiscal year until it has those tax returns in hand. So moving to July 1st makes a lot of sense. More importantly, the lieutenant governor's plan is calling for a long-term budget discipline for the state, where the governor and the state legislature would need to adopt not only a current budget, but make a five-year financial plan that's credibly balanced in terms of revenues that are going to recur and be there year in and year out with projected expenses 5 years down the road. And if it doesn't do that, then a financial review board, which would be appointed by the governor, the state comptroller, and the Senate and Assembly, would have the authority to say, wait a minute, you know, this is not this is not balanced, and give the governor the authority to reduce spending in order to bring it into balance. Now, that's a significant step. So it creates a lot of pressure for the legislature and the governor to come up with a credibly balanced five-year plan. Finally, the lieutenant governor is saying that given the severity of the current budget problems, largely due to the recession, but also to some extent the accumulation of years of not identifying long-term revenues in order to pay for some of the new commitments the state has entered into, says that in order to address the budget situation now without damaging essential services, the state needs some short-term borrowing authority that that the state could utilize over the first 3 years of the first five-year financial plan in order to borrow up to 10% of what the lieutenant governor projects is the five-year gap in the state budget, the accumulated gap of $60 billion, which seems like it's in the ballpark. So the state would only be able to borrow up to $2 billion in each of the first 3 years.
So there would still be a big deficit for this year. Maybe it would be $7.5 billion instead of $9.5 billion. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, the state would certainly have to take other actions. The borrowing that Ravitch is contemplating would nowhere be sufficient to allow the state to get off the hook in terms of balancing its budget.
So, E.J. McMahon, same question. The immediate benefits and longer-term costs of the Ravitch plan as you see them, I guess as James describes it, this is a method of kind of acknowledging that the state has been irresponsible over many years in the way it borrows and spends money. And this would institute some structure to help prevent that from happening in the future, kind of in exchange for which it would be able to borrow one more time to ease some of the intense, widespread pain that people around the state would have to face immediately. Does this work for you?
No. The narrative in the plan is the right one. I think the narrative actually stresses that these problems are rooted in excessive spending and in the state's habit of spending beyond its means, even when its revenues were pouring in at a record pace. Unfortunately, I think the remedy is giving the legislature far too much breathing room for far too little in return. I have no problem with moving to GAAP accounting and moving to a July 1st fiscal year. In fact, I've advocated both of those things. I think a stronger stress on long-term planning and on a long-term workout of the problem is also not a bad idea. However, I don't think this actually requires enough of the legislature to be a fair exchange. Basically, what the lieutenant governor is proposing is giving the legislature billions of dollars worth of breathing room. Plus, unmentioned here, is that the change in the fiscal year could be preceded by what would amount to a three-month extension of the current year or a special three-month interlude that would take some of the pressure off the legislature to get going on the budget for the coming year, which begins April 1st. Those are a series of very major concessions, in exchange for which you basically get an accounting change, plus this kind of convoluted Rube Goldbergian structure that would ultimately end in maybe the governor being able to impound expenditures when he thought the budget was getting out of balance. And that's a peculiar piece of this in itself. It seems to reflect kind of Dick Ravitch's sort of romantic attraction to the notion of having some sort of control board on the state level like the one that was in place in New York City 30 years ago. In fact, the situation is different.
And by the way, is still in place today, right? There's still an independent control board, and there is still a requirement for the city, for example, to release, I believe, a four-year budget plan every quarter, every single quarter. They have to look four more years down the road in order to satisfy the independent observers that the city is fiscally responsible looking forward. So why is it different? Why wouldn't it work for the state?
Well, the state is sovereign. The state doesn't have anybody in parental authority over it. The state constitutionally must take care of its own business. And, for instance, one thing that would have strengthened the Ravitch plan, although I still think it would have fallen short of what's needed here. It would be to simply say that as part of the deal, the governor will simply have impoundment authority to use as he sees fits when he needs to, without any sort of independent review board in between him and that action. The independent review board is a really curious notion, and it was interesting when Ravitch outlined it yesterday. The reporters in the room in the Capitol really were puzzled, because we're very well acquainted with so-called independent review boards here, and basically there ain't no such thing.
Really independent, because the leaders of the legislature and the governor and I think the controller, the same people who are responsible for drafting and approving the budget, would be the ones appointing the supposedly independent people?
Right. And it's, in short, yes. And it's contrary to the notions of accountability and responsibility that are reflected in our executive budget law. The executive budget law is actually structured pretty well, and a lot of our problems relate to the inability or unwillingness of a succession of governors, especially the current one, to use those powers effectively, and the unwillingness of the legislature to do its job. Right now, the legislature hasn't been doing anything for the past several weeks, nothing. They haven't got moved to square one in responding to the governor's budget proposal.
I want to get this into human terms and out a little bit of budgetary abstractions in a minute, but your bottom line, it sounds like, is more pain now rather than trying to ease it through this borrowing and the structure that you believe in. So if you accept that premise, what would the pain be? Let's put that in human terms. And the two of you are going to disagree on this, I think. But, EJ, I'll stay with you for the moment. What would that extra pain feel like now? We're talking about $2 billion additional cuts, I guess, between now and April 1st for the fiscal year that begins on April 1st. Is that going to be reflected in the education of New Yorkers, in the health of New Yorkers? What is going to be, you know, the cost of doing this in what you see as the fiscally responsible way?
Well, for instance, the governor's budget began by proposing a 5% cut in school aid, a category that has risen at tremendous rates over the past 5 to 10 years. Now, by comparison, 20 years ago, Mario Cuomo, in a similar but not quite a severe crisis, proposed a 10% cut in school aid. Would you have to further reduce school aid? Yes. And you could counter that and deal with it also by exercising another power that exists that relates to the fiscal crisis that no one is talking about, including Ravitch, which is to put a lid on rising salaries in our school systems, especially teachers' salaries, which are part of what drives the main thing that drives the expense of schooling. You could mitigate the impact of cutting school aid relieving school districts of the necessity to pay salary increases that typically average 4 or 5% a year across the state at a time when there's no inflation and the economy's not growing. So when you talk about pain, the question about pain and how widely pain is being shared, right now there is no pain at all being felt by public employees. And that's a key way. Spreading some of that pain is a key way to mitigate the so-called pain associated with reducing other expenditures. Now, there's other aspects of the budget before we get to that, before you get to schools and health care. There's hundreds of millions of dollars in potential budget savings that no one is talking about, starting with a potential $200 to $300 million savings in the legislature's own budget. So, I mean, this, you know, talking about as if there's just no way to cut the budget more without causing extraordinary pain for everybody in New York, I mean, that's just wrong.
James Parrott, do you agree?
Not quite. I'm sure you're surprised to hear that.
Shocked.
What the governor's proposed, I think, are cuts in Medicaid, cuts in education aid. He's not actually proposing permanent cuts in education aid. He's stretching out a commitment that he was party to in 2007 to phase in a solution to the CFE case that was initially filed back in 1993 when Governor Spitzer came in. He said, you know, the state's not going to shirk its responsibility anymore. We're going to respond to the court mandate to implement a solution to this. And that calls for increased aid to districts like New York City that have a lot of poor students and that need additional aid. So the governor is still has, in the out years of his budget, increases in education aid. So I think that we need to figure out, if we're serious about long-term structural balance in the budget, we need to figure out how we're going to pay for that. I don't think that teachers are overpaid. I don't think they've been getting 5% increases. There's an environment in this country where increased demands are placed on public school teachers, and everybody is trying to attract qualified school teachers. I don't think this is the time to say school teachers are going to, you know, pay the price for,
well,
Wall Street mess.
I mean, if I understood EJ correctly, he was proposing basically for the next few years, when we're in a zero inflation period, more or less, zero raises for the teachers, and that would go a long way toward balancing the budget without actually decimating the schools.
I don't think anybody's projections are for zero inflation. There was a time in a few months after the spike in oil prices had subsided where the year-over-year change in the consumer price index was very low. It got as low as zero. Nobody's projecting zero inflation going forward.
EJ?
Well, does that mean James is willing to trade it for what projected inflation is, which is between 1% and 2%?
Well, I think, you know, you have to look at the larger picture here. You have to look at the commitments that the state has made over the years. Phasing in the CFE case was one way to do that. We've taken on an incredible responsibility in New York in increasing the Medicaid rolls as a way to bring down the number of people in New York State who don't have health insurance. That's been very costly. We've done that because there hasn't yet been a sufficient federal response to how you're going to provide health coverage for all citizens. So there are things like that the state has undertaken, and we haven't decided how we're going to pay for that. We haven't taken a close look at a huge inventory of tax credit programs and tax expenditure programs that drain money away from the state. We haven't looked at, you know, given that we have a large Medicaid system, we have an EPIC program that provides subsidized prescription drugs to senior citizens. We haven't seriously looked at how we can economize by negotiating a better deal for the purchase of those prescription drugs from pharmaceutical companies.
All right. We can save
hundreds of millions of dollars that way.
I mean, basically, our Medicaid costs are unaffordable, I would suggest, because we provide more services to more people at greater expense than any other state does. I mean, that's just a fact. And the reason we have fewer people with health insurance coverage is because through our regulatory policies, we've essentially destroyed our individual health insurance market in ways that, in fact, the Obama administration wants to spread nationally. So that's a big difference. But I'd like to make one point about borrowing. This is a state that has repeatedly borrowed excessively in the past. We have $60 billion worth of state-supported debt now, very high debt levels, of which, and $10 billion of that $60 billion relates to past deficit borrowing, including deficit borrowing earlier in this decade, repeatedly. This is a heavy debt load. You basically, if you want to talk about pain, you're talking about shifting the burden for decisions the legislature is unwilling to make now to future generations on top of that other burden.
And let's, we have to take a break. We'll continue with James Parrott from the Fiscal Policy Institute and E.J. McMahon from the Manhattan Institute. We'll start to take your calls right after the break. Listeners, should the state of New York borrow to ease the pain of the coming year's massive budget deficit, or should it just figure out how to allocate the pain now? You've been hearing some of both sides of that question. 212-433-WNYC. We'll go to your calls right after the break. 212-433-9692. And we'll also ask our guests, when and how far will the economy come back to make state government whole in the sense that it was a few years ago? We are hearing now that the recession in terms of jobs is not as bad as everybody thought it was going to be in New York. Let's see if that's going to be reflected in the state getting back to where it was in maybe 4 or 5 years or not. 212-433-9692. Stay tuned.
I haven't denied the fact that a lot of people are going to get hurt and a lot of jobs are going to get lost and a lot of benefits are going to have to be deferred if we're going to meet these objectives.
Richard Ravitch, the lieutenant governor, talking about the plan he released yesterday for restructuring some of New York State's debt so we don't have to cut $9.5 billion out of the state budget by the fiscal year, which begins on April 1st. Good idea to borrow from the future to ease the current pain, or bad idea? 212-433-9692 or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. Daniel in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling, Daniel.
Hello. Thanks for having me. I think the Ravitch plan is misguided at best, as it simply kicks the can down the road. And simply put, I would say this. New York can either choose to be Greece or it can choose to be Ireland. And we'll see how Greece and Ireland turn out. But the reality is, two major issues with New York State. One, the level of spending on public employees is outrageous in terms of pensions and compensation and overall employment of the public sector versus the private sector. Two, the regulations in New York, both with regard to health care, has inflated the cost of health care for individuals who want to start a business, and overall regulation of those who want to start businesses is outrageous. And actually, there's a third point. The progressive taxation in New York and reliance on Wall Street to pay the taxes to support the bloated public spending and pensions is disappearing precisely because of the government's attacks on Wall Street and Wall Street compensation. So what you have is those who make money to support the public sector are leaving. And eventually, with the heavy debt load, all you need is a pop-up in interest rates to create a severe debt crisis down the road where New York will not be able to borrow. And this is probably going to happen, as you stated, because New York is actually in recovery mode. And as such, in recovery mode, the economy will get better, but the weight of the borrowing is going to consume more and more of the budget.
All right. So let me get a response. Daniel, you put a lot on the table there and a lot of really salient points. So James Parrott from the Fiscal Policy Institute, you want to react to some of that? How about the comparison of New York potentially with Greece, borrowing more and more and more to fund its spending, and finally, you know, the accounting comes due?
Right. Well, I think what the Ravitch plan is proposing is that the state commit to balance its budget over the long term and that we figure out how we're going to bring revenues in line with expenditures and economize where we can and get rid of the unnecessary tax expenditures and other things that we just simply can't afford. So I don't think Greece is at that point right now. So I don't think that comparison is relevant given what Ravitch is proposing. In terms of public sector workers being compensated a lot more than private sector workers, you know, the evidence just doesn't suggest that. When you look at the skills and the education of public sector workers, their compensation is on a par with the private sector in New York. When you look at their benefits, they have health insurance. It's not the world's greatest health insurance plan, but they have health insurance, something that we would like to see in this country every employer provide. They have a pension plan. The average pension benefit is $20,000 a year. I don't think anybody's getting rich off of that. We would like to see every employer provide that. So I don't think that is what's causing this imbalance between
in a world where
the revenues. And then finally, Brian, when the caller said that Wall Street people are leaving New York because of taxation, there is absolutely no evidence that I have seen to support that. The governor cited in the lieutenant governor in his proposal, Dick Ravitch, cited some migration data which seemed to suggest that New York is way ahead of the country in terms of the degree to which people leave New York. And the suggestion was is that that makes New York's situation unique. Two things on that. One, I think that data is flawed because it doesn't account for the fact that the Census Bureau makes an adjustment in the population estimates for New York City and New York State that add 400,000 people that are not reflected in those out-migration data. So I think if you reconcile those two, the out-migration picture looks a lot different. Secondly, you know, a lot of the out-migration is people going to Florida to retire. You know, they also leave other states in the so-called Frost Belt to go to Florida. So I don't think that's necessarily reflection of
EJ,
any structural
problem. EJ, I know you
want
to get in on the taxes question, but let's further it first with Bob in Rego Park, who also wants to talk taxes. Hi, Bob. You're on WNYC.
Ryan, how you doing?
Okay.
How you doing? Continue to do an amazing job.
Thank
I want to be very specific. I wanted to ask this question. I almost got to ask the governor this question. Given that if you make $60,000 a year or $600,000, you're paying the exact same rate, which is outrageous. The issue here,
no,
of course,
not.
Is to get the legislature to increase the taxes to raise billions of dollars, and instead of nickel and dime people for sugar sodas and cutting people, let people who have money contribute instead of just taking and taking.
Raise taxes on who, Bob?
On those who make, I'm just throwing out a number, over $250,000 or more. Raise the state tax, not have me, who makes $60,000, pay the exact state tax as someone who makes $600,000.
All right, E.J. McMahon, go ahead.
Well, he's been listening, I think, to James too much. That's not true. You don't pay the same rate as making $600,000, and you didn't pay the same rate as somebody making over $600,000 even before the rate on the guy in the upper income range was raised over 30% last year, which is, by the way, not raising as much revenue as projected. The tax structure here is very progressive, and the entire combination of tax credits, exemptions, deductions, and graduated rates ensures that somebody
you're
making
talking about the income tax.
Hang on, one at a time. Yes, and I think caller.
Wait a minute. He's talking about the tax rate and claiming that he pays the same tax rate as somebody making over $600,000.
Well,
EJ, at
what income does the highest income tax rate kick in New York State,
right
state
now,
income tax?
Well, right now it's $500,000. The permanent level is for a married joint, it's $40,000, but open the tax book and look at it. Your tax is not just a function of the rate and where it kicks in on taxable income. You have exemptions, credits, and deductions, all of which determine your effective tax rate. The effective tax rate of middle-class New Yorkers and working New Yorkers on the state income tax is a fraction of the effective tax rate under the permanent tax code of people who make higher incomes. That's a fact.
So
it
we've
was
got
set
the,
up that way.
All right, we've got both of your views on the table on this. Is there
right.
any tax increase at all, James Parrott, in the Ravitch plan? We've heard about borrowing. We've heard about cutting. Is there any tax change in the Ravitch plan as you understand it?
He doesn't talk about taxes at all. He seems to suggest, or this at least in the presentation yesterday, that if New York were as a last resort to increase taxes, that you want to be very cautious in doing that because it may harm the economy. But again, in the narrative, he cites this data on people leaving New York, and I think that's just, you know, that's a misreading of the data, and there's really no analysis that the tax structure is leading people to leave New York. There's a lot of anecdotal comments about that. The caller was absolutely right, though. If you apply what he said to the overall state and local tax structure, when you add in sales taxes, which are very regressive, that is, low-income people pay a much higher share of their income in sales taxes, when you add in property taxes and other state and local taxes, people in the middle pay a higher share of their income in state and local taxes.
All right.
In New York.
I don't want to go round and round on this one. Let me get a few voices on from callers, and then we'll get a last word from each of you. Tom in Carmel in Putnam County. Tom, you're on WNYC.
Hey, Brian. I just had a question. My brother-in-law works in Michigan, and part of closing their budget thing, he works for the Department of Natural Resources, was a furlough Friday. Is there any talk in New York about sort of an across-the-board reduction in state salaries so that everyone can keep their job like small businesses are doing? You know, you keep hearing about people who take a little bit less so the guy next to them keeps their job until things... Well,
Tom, thank you. EJ, quick answer to Tom.
Not only is there no talk of it, in 3 weeks, all of the unionized employees of state government are due to get a 4% base pay increase on top of the 3% they got last year. There have been no layoffs, no furloughs, no threat of either.
Valerie in
so
Hempstead.
That's the answer to your question.
Valerie in Hempstead, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, Brian. What I want to bring to everybody's attention, we're so focused in on taxes and so forth, but nobody is bringing up the fact that the contractors that the city, the state, and different agencies are taking business from, we're being gouged by them. Nobody is demanding that these contractors take down their prices at least 30%. If we were to take the contractors that give the city and the state business and say, hey, you got to charge us 30% less, we will close our budget. We're being gouged by contractors. Not only that, New York needs to stop the sealed bids. Open up the bids and create a competition. And guess what? You will give the smaller contractors business.
Valerie, thank you very much. Liza in Lower Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Liza.
Hi. I want to offer a little bit of information coming from the voice of a teacher. I am a professor for SUNY. I have been for 12 years. I am tenured, and I'm actually on my way to work. I'd like to address the gentleman who was saying that teachers are overpaid and they have fat salaries and get 5 to 6% annual raises. In the 13 years that I've been working for SUNY, I have never had a 5% raise. I have never had anything close to a 5% raise. I would love that.
Are you going
to
get a 4% raise on April 1st?
No, right now we are not in contract negotiations because our contract was negotiated. But in terms of the contract, I would say that of all the time that I have been working for SUNY, probably half of that time I was working without a contract because the state and the city and the school administration drag their heels enormously.
But you got retro pay for that period of time, didn't you?
We do get retro pay, but the thing to keep in mind is that we have never been high salary workers. And for us to not get timely raises is actually makes life really, really difficult.
Under the present circumstances, can you argue for getting raises that are higher than inflation?
Hello?
I'm going to give you a practical example.
Uh-huh.
I am having a root canal because I have a broken tooth. The root canal is costing me $3,400. My dental insurance supplied by my job will pay me $340 for that. I have to come up with $3,400 within a three-week period. I take home $4,000 a month.
Liza, I'm going to leave it there with those numbers. Thank you for chiming in, and thanks to everybody who called on this segment. Let's just get a last word from James Parrott from the Fiscal Policy Institute and E.J. McMahon from the Manhattan Institute. James, politically, where is this going? Is this going to break down? I mean, just, you know, if we take you and EJ as sort of liberal conservative surrogates, is this going to break down? The Democrats in the legislature are for the Ravitch plan and the Republicans are against it, or is it more complicated than that?
I think everybody in Albany takes Dick Ravitch very seriously. He's been looked to for years for just this sort of guidance on things. I think with Ravitch playing an active role, hopefully some progress will be made on this. Hopefully the Ravitch proposal will get improved along the way. But I think the state legislature and the governor really have to come up with something that addresses the need for long-term structural balance in New York. So I think that will be a plus in the end. And I'm optimistic that progress will be made.
EJ, same question.
Well, I think that Dick Ravitch is fighting the last war. In fact, a war that ended that was fought 30 years ago, and applying that template to a different situation. And unfortunately, he is offering up a bad deal, which the legislature will only make worse before adopting it. So I think that this is a real problem, and it also preempts dangerously the authority of the next governor, who, unlike Dick Ravitch, will actually be elected. And so I think it's highly problematic. I think it's a missed opportunity. I think it's badly timed, and that it is actually going to end up making our situation worse.
EJ McMahon from the conservative think tank, the Manhattan Institute, James Parrott from the liberal think tank, the Fiscal Policy Institute. Thank you both very much. I think the listeners know a lot more about this and your points of view than they did an hour ago. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Peter Rojas from GDGT.com continues his March series on our digital lives. Today, services that identify where you are physically when you're online. Do we really want that? And whatever happened to the dream of free universal Wi-Fi? Stay tuned.